Welcome to Under Construction with Chadwicks. I'm Donal Callan, and I'm delighted to be joined by Pat Moore. Pat, how are things?
All good, Donal, yourself?
I'm great. I'm looking forward to today's chat, Pat, because we're going to broaden our horizons a little bit. We're going to chat about nutrition and a bit of mental health. Before we get there, I'm going to introduce dietitian and nutritionist Ciara McNulty. Ciara, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me.
We're delighted to have you along. Ciara, just before we kick on, you must, when everyone knows your role, the amount of people that look for free advice, I'd say, is quite annoying, is it?
That is so true. I get a lot of, unsolicited questions and advice seeking online, but it's actually dangerous to give, general advice when you don't know someone so well. So I really just say, you know what, consult your GP and try to chat to a dietitian.
You can give Donal any advice you want. Give it to him.
Just go around with a card machine and just start charging.
Revolut, please.
There you go. Well, Pat mentioned it. We are delighted to be joined by Dublin royalty, eight All-Irelands on the pitch. Philly McMahon, you are so, so welcome. Off the pitch as well, though, Philly, you are busy. You've your own gym up and going. So a perfect man for this conversation. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, cheers for having me on. Looking forward to it.
Brilliant. Tell us a bit about the gym and how you got into it.
I set up the gym when I was probably 18 or 19.
Wow.
I was broke, repeat me leaving cert, and I needed to pay for me car that I bought. I had a 13 grand car at, stupidly I bought and went back and repeated my leaving cert and started training a football team in an attic space in Ballymun Kickham's GA club, and their parents then asked to be trained by me, and it blew up basically, and it's now a gym now. So that's how it started from.
Jeez, I didn't know it was that long ago.
Yeah, it was like, I suppose I've only ever just walked in the fitness industry. I know we're speaking with Chadwicks today as the partner of the podcast, but for me, the only other job I'd done was security for my mum and dad's company, so that's the only bit of dirt I had in my hands. Everything else was in the gym industry, so I've done that since I've been 18 or 19 to where I am today.
Brilliant. We're going to chat mental health, we're going to chat nutrition, but I have to ask, you must have had a field day with Paul Brogan on Dancing with the Stars. I would have paid money to see your WhatsApp group when it was going on.
Yeah, Paulie is a great character. He'll tell you that he's the best out of Brogans in any way in terms of football. I hadn't seen Paul for a good while, and I remember seeing him play a game for Plunkett's up in Ballymun Kickham's my GA club, and he doesn't have the physique anymore as a footballer. He's like a bodybuilder now. Yeah, certainly doesn't come across as a dancer.
Yeah.
But I remember him, the Brogans wouldn't be great for having cruciate ligament strength,
Okay,
they've
very
all
good.
Done their knees in.
Okay.
And I remember him running for a ball, and he's just so big that he could barely stop. I says, you can't even, half time, I says, what are you doing playing the sport? You can barely stop, you've no cruciate. I said, and he just says, I'm just trying my best. And the fact that he's gone on to do dancing is just, we were just amazed that he could have the agility to do it. But fair play to him.
Yeah.
It takes courage to go and do something like that if you're a footballer.
It certainly does. Ciara, we might as well kick on with it. I suppose the idea of the podcast came, and the idea is probably to give a bit of experience and advice and a bit of knowledge into areas, because we were lucky to chat to a fair few of our inter-county hurlers. But it's just making smart decisions at critical times. Of course, people are busy at work, and people that will listen to this pod are busy with their trades, and then they're probably balancing sport. Is that something that you think we're seeing more of? People trying to get the life balance right with eating correctly while also trying to keep so many plates spinning?
Absolutely. And I think it's a really important topic to bring up and to provide education on, because I think a lot of us are susceptible to almost underfueling our lifestyles. We are familiar with understanding that if we play sport or we go to the gym or we do loads of running or whatever that might be, that that requires nutrition and fuel. And we're really good at equating exercise with good nutrition. But sometimes we forget that even when we live a more active lifestyle, or we have a job that requires a lot of physical exertion, or we commute to work, we forget that that's actually moving our body as well. And it requires a similar amount of preparation and a thought process and a fueling around that. So it's really important to kind of identify that even if you are maybe not doing as much physical activity as the next person, but you are working in construction or you're really physically exerting yourself during the day, it requires the same amount of thought process around your nutrition and planning and adequate fuel. So I'm excited to get into the specifics around that.
Philly, you could probably give us an example of it. You know what I mean? You were working away there as well while playing at the top end of the game, winning All-Irelands, trying to get that balance. How difficult is it as a player?
Yeah, like I suppose for GAA players, they done a study there recently and basically they looked at the amount of hours that GAA players actually spend in the sport. And it was kind of roughly around 40 hours a week. So because we're not professional athletes, we obviously have to work. So we're working, you know, 35, 40 hours on top of that. So you've very little, you know, in the day to do anything else, probably 4 or 5 hours, you know. So so constantly you're thinking about what you can do to help yourself in that environment, you know, in terms of the performance element of nutrition. Like, so as soon as you wake up, you know, for me, I would have had to, at certain stages of my career, go to different levels of nutrition on the basis of where I was I playing or was I not playing? And using that opportunity to get in better shape, let's say. But certainly from an energy efficiency point of view, you know, Gaelic footballers become, and other codes, I suppose, will become experts over experimentation over the years. Yeah. Because like every sport, generally when there's elitism in it, you know, it gets to a point where nutritionists come in and give information, and at a certain age there's a maturity part to play where, you know, if you're a young kid and you're getting information, there's only so much that you're digesting, but it's trial and error as you get older, you know. But crucially, it's an experimentation. You know, I've had brilliant nutritionists over the years that, you know, have given good information, but some of it hasn't worked for me. But then I've got information that has worked for me. So I think it's crucial that people listening in find what works for them based off their lifestyle, because there's not one size fits all.
That's the key point, Ciara, isn't it? Like, I've seen it with my own teammates as well. Someone might follow what I call fads, you know, maybe eliminating certain food groups. And it could work perfectly for that person who's probably genetically totally different. But then I go and try to perform on that diet and I'm as flat as a pancake. So Philly's point, finding what's right for you. But just in general terms, fads and eliminating certain food groups, what would your take on that be?
Yeah, I'm so happy you said that. A lot of people don't go at nutrition with that approach, especially with so much access to information online and certain people almost promoting fad diets or a certain way and promoting that as gospel or as fact. And it's just not. The only fact is that we're all different. We all have our own genetics, physical activity levels, and our own requirements. And with that and fad dieting, it's massive and it's so hard to avoid. You really need to arm yourself with education and understand what's a good source of information, who's a good person to listen to, who's qualified to give you that advice. And most of the time, if it's promoting an exclusion of any food or food group or promoting one certain way of doing something as fact, it's more than likely a fad diet and it's more than likely unqualified advice. If it's a fad diet, it's probably not going to be sustainable, I would say, is the main thing. If you're cutting out something like carbohydrate, which is never recommended in someone that's physically active, or cutting out animal products, whatever that diet might be, or even intermittent fasting is a big one that I would see a lot, especially in men. It's really difficult for you to do that at a sustainable level or something that you will continue to do long term and to get good benefits from and to get performance enhancing benefits from. But again, in saying that, if it works for you, then that's brilliant. But I would also encourage people maybe to not try and influence their peers or influence people around them to copy them, because we all respond so differently to different types of diets.
Now, Donica, you can have takeaway 5 nights a week.
Yes, here we go, Pat.
Ciara, people often blame the busy lifestyles for, you know, a bad diet. What sort of tips could you give them in relation to eating healthy and eating?
Absolutely. Better? And I don't blame them, to be honest. It's hard. The biggest thing you can do, and it's definitely the most unsexy thing you can do, is really be prepared and plan. Find time in your day to prep as much food as possible. There's a significant difference between eating out and eating at home in terms of the nutrient quality and the nutrient composition of the meal that you're having. You'd be surprised in the amount of added sugar, salt, and fat that they'd be using in a restaurant setting, which will go on to have a significant impact on the amount of energy and the different types of nutrients that you're consuming. So the top tip is really prioritize, if you're in a place where you're ready to make a change and you're able to make a change to prioritize meal preparation and planning, and you have a basic level of knowledge and a basic skill set in order to do that for yourself, maybe you can get someone at home to help you if you need to. Prioritize timing and also just get the equipment that you need. You need Tupperware, you need something that you can cook something in the oven in, something that you can pan fry, and any Tupperware that you can bring that food with you to work and store in the fridge or store in the freezer. Utilize your freezer, utilize your fridge, cook in advance, and it doesn't need to be sexy. It can be chicken, broccoli, and rice if you enjoy that, but it also can be a little bit more elaborate if you have better skills to make funner meals. But don't overcomplicate things. Just emphasize how important it is to make your own food as much as possible.
My next question was, how do you avoid chicken, broccoli, and rice?
Yeah.
And make it more sexy.
Yeah, definitely. When it comes to planning a good, healthy meal, you need to think about something called the plate model. The way that we describe this to any sort of general individuals, half of your meal coming from nice variety of vegetables. If you're more physically active, I want you to change that half to a third and make more carbohydrates. So things like rice, potatoes, pasta, bread, whole grains are possible. So always choose something that's brown. It's going to give you fiber, which is really going to help stabilize the release of that carbohydrate, give you energy for longer. It's also going to help your gut health, which is a really nice, cool topic at the moment, which we're always trying to promote. So third of your meal is coming from nice brown carbohydrates. The other third is coming from a lean source of protein. We were having a chat about breakfast rolls before this. Unfortunately, things like processed meats, processed breakfast meats like sausages and bacon are not an example of a lean protein. So things like chicken breast, lean mince, eggs, low-fat dairy, things like that, really, really important if you're lifting heavy things throughout the day and you need a good source at all of your meals. Then the last third coming from colorful veg. So the more variety with vegetables, the better.
Philly, how much has it changed for you since when you started out to with education and with knowledge? I'll never forget my first nutritional chat when we were in it really young into the kind of rugby setup, and they were telling us we couldn't have enough carbohydrates like Jaffa cakes and wine gums. And you know what I mean? It just how much it's moved on. At that time, they were like, with the amount you're expressing, just keep eating away at these. Whereas now knowledge, knowing that there's better sources of it at the right time, of course they play their part, but education's helped with that.
Yeah, I think the science around nutrition has been the same for a long, long time, especially sports nutrition. But I think people's lives have got altered and become a bit more stretched, let's say. Like, for example, when I first got on the Dublin team in 2008, like, we were told to take a tray of Powerade home and a tray of water home and drink that for the week. Like,
yeah.
And at the end of the season, the lads were going to the dentist with getting fillings in left, yeah, right and centre, you, yeah, know. So amazing. To that, to being told to drink it more so throughout the game and make sure you get your hydration before the game rather than true water, obviously, and if you need any electrolytes and stuff like that. But I just want to add something to Kira's answer there around kind of the busy lifestyle, because I think prepping is really key. There's other spaces there that are starting to be created in the nutrition world where if you're somebody that's extremely busy, like you can actually buy healthy ready-made meals. You can also go to the stage where you can buy kind of meal packs where they give you the ingredients and the instructions. So people that maybe are probably struggling with time but also are not really good cooks, it gives them a good way of experimenting with foods and recipes. Because what we do see is a lot of people, we all have different taste buds, you know, and ultimately we've generated that. That's been probably inherited down through generations. You go back two or three generations, you're probably eating the same food, like, you know. So it's very hard then for somebody to say, well, eat these foods, not knowing that you've probably different taste buds. And that's where you'll probably get bored of chicken, rice and spuds all the time, because that's generally, culturally, that's what we do as Irish. But there's options there, I think, that's is looking to solve the problems for those type of solutions. Like, you know, and I think, you know, that could be something for somebody that's very busy if they're struggling to prep food as well.
Kira, are you finding that a lot in your game, nutrition, dietitian? Do you find that there is quick wins like that you can kind of advise, okay, if you are that time poor, there's an option here for you at least?
Oh, definitely. I think that's a brilliant idea. I'm so glad you brought that up. Having the pre-ready meals, a lot of them will have the nutrition information on the pack as well. Mm. It's important to know what your needs are. So I would recommend maybe speaking to a nutritionist or dietitian to help you work out your unique requirements and kind of your per meal requirements. Because some people will need a lot more protein than others, and you can really identify that within a meal. Similarly with cooking at home, I think having those pre-made packs of meals that you cook yourself are brilliant because they give you everything, they let you know how to do it, and you get experience with cooking.
Yeah,
and you get really comfortable.
Yeah, I know, you do, I actually
use them as well.
Yeah. And they give you the exact amount you need for that meal.
Yeah.
It depends on the level you're at, doesn't it, really, your knowledge. What kind of lifestyle you have. And that's, I think that's what we were both saying. It's, you know, it's very subjective to individuals, you know.
But they're perfect in a scenario where you've the time. I think Pat's point earlier, you know, when you're caught, and we'd find it an awful lot with people in the trade, and we all see the deli counters. How do you make better decisions in those moments?
Yeah, definitely. I would say if we're going for, say you're snacking, say it's a mid-morning break, you've had your breakfast or something like that, getting something that has less added sugar. It's a good practice to get into and just reading food labels if you're going into a shop to pick something up. So things that have less than 5 grams per 100 gram is a really simple way of identifying something like that. So things like Greek yogurt or even like hummus and brown bread or cheese and brown bread, or going to the deli counter, try to choose your brown bread. I know white rolls are so nice, but there's definitely a significant difference in choosing the brown carbohydrate. We talked about that earlier, stabilizing the release of that energy, getting in a good source of protein. So things like sausages and bacon, we try to avoid because of how much salt and fat there is. If you can have tuna or a chicken fillet without the breadcrumbs, that's a much better option. You're going to get a great result and a good amount of protein in there. And then get colorful vegetables. Even if you think you don't like vegetables, lettuce and tomatoes and cucumbers count. It doesn't need to be anything more than that, or something like sweet corn. So really be smart with your protein choice. Choose baked chicken or tuna at the counter. Reduce the amount of spreads. If you can use a low-fat mayo, great. But things like that add up, and then try to choose brown in your carbohydrates.
Great, I'd be going to the deli counter with you, Donegan. We won't be bringing Kira with us. She can go with Philly.
I'll bring you.
Yeah, there you go. Philly, I suppose we are better at chatting as dressing rooms and in the trade. We're better at chatting about things like nutrition. But when it comes to mental health, I think there's been a turn, though, in people speaking up an awful lot more. Certainly people talking, but just maybe your experience in all that. I know you've done an awful lot of work in it. Have we seen, you know, change in male behaviour with talking up when you're struggling?
Yeah, it's hard. It's like, look, you know, mental health, even the term mental health is quite challenging. And, you know, it's, I would like to call it mental de-stress. And we've always had it. It's always been a part of our makeup as human beings, you know. And I think once we, in a masculine dominant environment in a sport like GAA, it is extremely hard for somebody to put their hand up and say, I'm struggling here, like, you know. But we've had examples of people that have, you know, done it, and, you know, it's been massive for their change room. Like, we had a guy, Shane Carty, he's wrote a book since that, and couldn't get out of his car before he was going to a, I think we were playing a match, and he got a lift off one of his parents, and couldn't get out of the car, you know. And the amount of, I'd like to speak probably on behalf of the lads, but how strong he was and brave he was to put his hand up and say, I need help, was massive to the rest of us, because that kind of paved the way for us to say it's okay to do that when we're struggling. And, like, you have to remember, over a term of 10 to 14 years that I was on the squad, there's lads that have lost loved ones, there's lads that have went through breakups and stuff like that. And, you know, it's just one of those conscious things that, you know, once you have a good culture within the group, that you can actually speak to someone or text them outside of the change room and see what's going on. And we were very conscious of that. That connection piece made us probably stronger on the pitch, I suppose. But I just think it depends on the culture of the group and the tribe that you have. And in general, from a mental health perspective, that's crucial societally, that we can find that tribe to feel comfortable to actually approach somebody.
Philly, that's the real success. You know what I mean? Like, everyone goes on about you're all Ireland's, but creating an environment like that where you can show vulnerability, where you can actually stick your hand up and you know that you've got a band of brothers and sisters that have your back, is what we're all striving for, isn't it?
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, when my dad was terminally ill, you know, having Eoghan Ogara coming up to me, like, this is a guy that I would have went to war for, but would have, you know, plenty of occasions went to war against, because we were marking each other, you know. And him just taking the time to say, Philly, can I come pop up to see your dad? Like, you know, they're things that you'll remember for the rest of your days, you know. And that's the special energy we have as human beings, you know. The winning the medals and playing together and talking out together and is incredible as well. But taking your time outside of those hours to make a difference with a text message or visiting a family member of one of your teammates is
picked up stuff, Philly, and just people listen to this, coaches of other GA club, coach myself, but is there things you would have picked up on or someone would have picked up on in relation to the dressing room if one of the lads was down or one of the girls was down? Would you pick that up? Or
it's very hard to, like, you know, sometimes it's the lad that's the most happiest that actually is probably, I suppose,
struggling the most,
you know, hiding it the most, you know. So it's just keeping the dialogue alive. It's keeping the, you know, it's like a web, isn't it, really? The thicker the web, the more you can communicate with each other, you know, and that brings that, you know, it's having an environment where you can speak about vulnerabilities in a space that people can actually talk about then the pain and suffering they might have from something. Or, but it's just, yeah, it's being curious as well. You will have people that are also, you notice their energy is different, you know, because it's extremely hard environment. You know, there's no getting away with it. Like, you know, when you're spending the 40 hours a week and your 40 hours work and you've your family commitments outside of that, it's a difficult environment. It's professional without being paid, you know.
I don't know about that, Donegal.
Yeah. No, but it's mad you talk about that 40 hours. We actually had the flip side of it. I was lucky the sport I was playing was professional, but we would chat, you're here for 4 hours, but what are your other 20 hours like? Mm. The ones that none of us outside the environment see. So that was a big push from our dressing room, your other 20 hours. Were they used in the right way? Were they, you know, useful for the squad? Were you, you know what I mean, running around the place acting the clown, or were you serious as you like? But professionalism allowed for that.
Yeah, we were very lucky that we had, you know, we were in an environment where the population was dominantly in their county, you know. So at certain stages of the season we'd have to become tired as a group because there's a lot of energy, let's say, trying to be taken out of the group. And it could be just as simple like walking down the street and someone recognises you, possibly a Dublin fan, and says, oh, you're going to win an All-Ireland this year, or you're going to win next week, and you're like, I'm not actually thinking about winning, I'm thinking about performance here, I'm thinking about doing my job. And that takes energy away, because every time you're thinking of winning, you're not thinking of what you should be doing. And that's harmless, but, you know, that's where the group has to be together a little bit more. You know, it's the Paul O'Connell thing. It's pretending to be on the phone. Yeah, you know, it's not being ignorant, but it's just making sure that your energy is going the right direction for the group.
Ciara, bringing it back to nutrition then, in your experience, how has the industry changed over the years then?
Yeah, I think we have a lot of access to information. That's probably the biggest change. And with that access, as I kind of alluded to before, it seems like there is this one size fits all approach and we're all seeing a lot of the same information, but taking it in differently. So people may be seeing a fad diet and have this confirmation bias. This is the biggest trend that I'm seeing, where you have an idea. So you've seen something or someone has told you that intermittent fasting is the best thing to do. So with you believing that, you can start to pick up a lot of pieces of information that are telling you that you're right. So you might get really kind of deep into one way of thinking when it comes to nutrition. And I think a lot of people, especially the younger generations, are quite susceptible into going down this road of eating in a very particular way. And I think athletes and general population alike can become very dogmatic with their nutrition. And definitely because of the accessibility and the social media side of things and the way that we're seeing perfect bodies, body image issues, mental health issues, all of that can be really coming back down to the way that we're nourishing our bodies and the way that we're looking after ourselves. But it can be quite dangerous, I think, currently, with the access to all this information about diets.
Are you seeing that? Because if you open any of these social media platforms, we're all seeing the perfect bodies and we're hearing what they're doing to get the perfect bodies. But you, from your experience, know that's not the case.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I do see it a lot. And I think we're aware of it in young women, but everyone's affected by it. Absolutely everyone. There's no one that can avoid it. And we have a lot of influencers, not just the actual social media influencer, but people of power that are out there in the media, like actors or athletes or whoever it might be, that don't think they're doing anything wrong, but they have a massive vulnerable audience that are listening to them. So day in the life videos that are starting with a video of someone's abs and are showing a lot of very restricted dietary, you know, protocols and meals and small meals and different portions. And we're all comparing ourselves to these people online. And there's huge repercussions, not just eating disorders that are diagnosed by a medical professional, but disordered eating is really difficult to avoid. And I think almost everyone has had an experience with that, more so of recently.
Just on that point, like, I just go back to past experience, but I'll never forget a World Cup in 07. We were cut. We were in great condition. We weren't healthy. We weren't in great health. Of course, we probably looked the part, but in terms of being fit for purpose and doing our job, you know, and you know, I know people will look at it and maybe on sites or in change rooms dream for those bodies, but you have to be fit for what you'd like to do as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And with any season, so taking athletes, for example, it's very difficult to be in a shape where you look a certain way and you have lower percentage body fat and perform. Like, they do not go hand in hand. Mm. And it's really difficult for people to understand that, because you look the part as an athlete when you look that way. But your energy levels and your ability to recover and your ability to focus and concentrate are not nourished with a lower body fat. It's just really, really difficult to get there.
It's amazing. We do brilliant strength and conditioning coaches and stuff, but they were like, of course we want to get you to the level, but we want you to be unbelievably healthy, because that's what drives the bus.
Yeah. That was my excuse for having higher body fat. play bar above 12% body fat.
Did you find that?
I had a discussion with our nutritionist Daniel Davey. He was excellent.
Yeah. You know, yeah,
and
excellent.
I was probably conning myself a little bit, but I was like, you know, I got an all-star that year and it was higher body fat, and I'm trying to get, but look, it's subjective again. It's what you tell yourself as well. But I 100% agree. It's not really, to an extent, obviously, it's not how you look, it's how you play. It's not that all show, no go. It's all go, no show type thing, you know. But you have, you have great examples of people influence. You have like this Liver King dude, you know, who's ripped to shreds, recently came out and said, you know, admitted that he was taking steroids. I'd say half the world are eating liver, like, just because of that and other things, I won't say them.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then brilliantly we had, is it Jeff Sterling came out about eating disorders, people dying from eating disorders, and he got emotional on Sky. It was incredible to hear some of the profile. Kind of, obviously, in a sporting world, you know, talking about a topic like that was incredible. So yeah, probably need a bit more of that, you know?
Yeah, I followed that one you were chatting about. Of course, you see this incredible physique and then you hear what's really behind it, and you know that they're cutting corners and it can
be selling bars and selling protein. And
of course,
that's what it's all about.
But I suppose we have the knowledge to know that it's unfortunate for maybe younger people who are getting into it. What would the advice there, Ciara, be for, you know, people starting out? They want to, you know, fuel their bodies well for work, life, training, whatever it is. What are the big rocks, the important things to make sure you're taking care of?
I think there's three main things you need to think about with your diet: carbohydrates, protein, and hydration, especially when you're working. So we lose water, but we also lose electrolytes, which is just a fancy word for salt. Most people will probably get enough salt in their diet, especially if they're eating breakfast meats or kind of packaged meats. They usually just have added salt. So I would just focus on hydration. Look at your urine color. If you find that it's medium to dark yellow, it's a great indication that you're dehydrated. It can be as simple as that. So really try and be on top of your hydration and focus on water. Try and drink that as much as possible. We don't want any cavities. We don't need fancy drinks. Carbohydrates are your body's source of fuel. They really are fueling your brain, so that your ability to concentrate at work and on the pitch and in the gym. But they're also your muscles' ability to move and for you to be able to run faster. Basically a supplement for performance. It's the one thing that's going to fuel you. Examples would be fruit, bread, pasta, potatoes, things like that. So getting those in regularly I've said this about 10 times, but brown is better. Whole grains are great. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you can have it for snacks. If you're going from work to sport or gym, make sure you get a carbohydrate-rich snack on the way there. You really need it before you start to push yourself that little bit more. Protein, everyone loves protein. We're all familiar with getting in enough protein. Usually we're all getting in enough of that, but I think the source of your protein is the most important thing to really, if you want to fix your diet from a health perspective, I would say try as best as you can to use lean sources. As I've said before, things like baked chicken breast, tuna, oily fish like salmon is brilliant. It also is anti-inflammatory. We have those healthy omega-3s. Low-fat dairy, eggs, turkey, things like red meat we can definitely have. It's a great source of iron, but we want to limit that to about once or twice per week. So carbs, protein, and water for your hydration. That's a really good starting point.
I think for young people as well, like a crucial part to the habits they pick up is not just from their own parents, but actually who they hang around with and their parents.
Yeah.
So it's like for me, you know, I'm kind of have a young kid now, and I'm kind of thinking of what I'm eating around them and what I'm doing, and that is great. But then when he goes to his friends and what their parents are eating and stuff like that, and they're kind of thinking, well, what's that? I think habitually, like, that's who we're made up of, habits. Like that's who we are. So I think it's crucial that the parenting side of things, our coaches are, you know, it's constantly being reinforced, as what Kieran said, you know.
That's exactly the way I think as well with my own kids. Of course, you want them to be around people that would influence them in good ways, but I feel it's up to me to set the example. So, like, I can't be telling them go train if they see me sitting my ass every evening. You know what I mean? Yeah. But, like, they need to see dads doing that, or, you know, dad and mom put on healthy meals. That's why you kind of show the way a little bit more as preaching it, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I think going back to kind of that disordered eating and body image topic as well, it's really important the language that you use around food and kids. They pick up things from such an early age. You would be surprised. There's, you know, really interesting data about how young, like, what age do younger boys and girls start to think about their body negatively? And it's under 7 years old.
It's incredible, wow, isn't it?
Yeah.
Can you help me? Because I'm completely ignorant when it comes to emotional eating. Can you talk to us a little bit about that and the role it plays and how people can have better habits around it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really interesting. And with everything, it's individual. So when we are under stress, maybe mentally or psychologically, a lot of people may turn to food, and it can present itself as disordered eating. With emotional eating, I would say most commonly, potentially binge eating tendencies or something called binge eating disorder might present itself. It is a diagnostic eating disorder. And just using this as an example, it's someone that eats maybe in secret or eats large amounts of food comparative to someone else. They might eat quite rapidly. And the most important thing with binge eating is it brings about a huge sense of shame or guilt after this episode is over. And it's something that happens chronically. So maybe once a week for 3 months, that's some way you can identify it. The biggest thing is if you feel like you fit into that category, or if your disordered eating or your emotional eating is taking over your life, you need to talk to a healthcare professional. That's the number one thing to do. Go to your GP. It's also very important for you to rely on mental health. So seeing a therapist, or really not just focusing on the food, but addressing where that emotional eating is coming from and kind of what you're running away from or what you're trying to soothe yourself from with food. That's one of the most important things when it comes to emotional eating. And I would see most people going down that route. It might be maybe more restrictive tendencies, whatever it might be. I would say the most important thing is to identify that you have a problem and seek individual support, because with everything in nutrition, it's so individualized and there's not a one size fits all, but you need someone that you can confide in and can work closely with you to help with your mental health and then therefore put in some nice nutrition protocols.
It's the one where they cross Philly, isn't it?
Yeah, like, I suppose to kind of the understanding that I have around food is that when you put, you know, it's like a process, you know, you get hungry, there's maybe a time frame around when you're meant to be eating, you know, you've watched ads, or, you know, you've been brainwashed into thinking this is the way you should eat. And ultimately what happens then is you put this food in your mouth, you have sensors in your tongue that sends the signal to your brain to tell you exactly what it is. Is it salty? Is it sweet? Is it umami? Is it bitter? And then you get a release of dopamine. And that makes you feel good. And then after that, it's trying to chase that with food. And every food does that for you, apart from broccoli. Broccoli is the only thing that doesn't give you a release of dopamine. Whether it's healthy or unhealthy, that's the way the brain works when you, when you're putting food in through your mouth. So I think, I like to think that the way I food is actually to challenge that, but give the same results. So if you feel like, you know, generally you'll get really good feeling from eating a burger or a pizza or a curry, something that's seen as unhealthy, you know, you're still getting that release of dopamine, but can you do that in a healthy version? If you really want to chase that emotional reward from food, can you make a healthy burger? Can you make healthy fries? Can you make, you know, your homemade curry? And you're still, you're basically challenging the way the brain, kind of the mechanism of the brain.
We're going to sound like two geeks here, but it is actually unbelievably rewarding when you nail it and you know it's so much healthier, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the taste is bang on as well. You're like, oh my God, this is fuel.
Well, that's, you don't have any kind of doubt after your food. Like, or what did I eat that for? Is that going to make me perform under, or am I going to feel crap in a while? Like, you know, yeah. So it's having a better relationship with food, yeah. I think, will help challenge emotional eating.
You've transitioned unbelievably well away from the pitch, Philly. What do you do? Like, advice on just balance for life. You would have seen people, you know, you'd see them coming into the gym now that are time poor. What are
I have a coaching based gym, so we're constantly kind of working on people around their lifestyle. So most people that join gyms are like, you know, why are you going to join the gym? Want to lose weight? Want to put weight on? I want to build muscle, whatever it may be. And we just look at changing the habits of those individuals. Like, what are you doing? What's your sleep like? Sleep has a huge impact on your hormones, which has a huge impact on your fat burning. one of the big issues you have with people that, let's say, you know, the big topic in the world is weight loss. Why do people struggle with weight loss? I'd say a huge, huge amount of people struggle with relationships that have an impact on their stress, that has an impact on their weight loss. So stress is a major thing. Even things like, this is going to sound crazy, like lights, you know, have a huge impact on stress. Like, you know, so your job, you know, there's so much.
Your circadian rhythm.
Yeah. Your sleep patterns, like, you know. So we are still trying to discover ourselves as human beings, like, you know. But I do think when we have people coming in, it's about getting to the root of why they want to change. And ultimately, a lot of people that will join gyms or go through air programs is based off when they look in the mirror, they feel, you know, naked, they're unhappy with themselves. So it's getting to the emotions of that, which really gives you longevity in terms of the results. You know, if someone comes in and says, I want to lose weight, and you say to them, well, have you lost weight before? And they'll say, yeah. How much have you lost? I lost a stone. Do you still want to lose a stone? You say, yeah. Well, that's probably a bad goal because you haven't kept that off. You know, so we want people to really connect. So it might be, you know, create a fantasy. What's that going to look like? Well, I want to be in the best shape of my life. Right, okay, how do we do that then? You know, what are you doing now? And we'll basically do, we'll have a tracker. I'm sure Kira's heard about these trackers where you just look at their patterns over 6 weeks and take a little bits out, add bits in. And you're not trying to, you know, I say take bits out, but it's like you're replacing things. Whereas everybody in this health and fitness world keeps taking from people. It's like, take that away, take that away. It's add to your life. It's to add to your lifestyle. And that's what we want to do with people.
Of course, you want to add to it, but there can be stuff like injuries. And I don't want to say like there can be excuses or outs with them, but there can be different things you can do. Maybe your injury holds you back from doing something, but there's always something else you can probably work on.
Yeah, an injury is just a bit of feedback to that something's wrong with your body in terms of maybe your movement deficiency or maybe overloading. So I think sometimes all the time when we get injured, we get pissed off, don't we? We're being stopped or prevented from doing something in a journey. And I think we can look at after a period of time, we can look at that injury and say, hold on, that was some feedback from my body. Like if I pulled the hamstring, well, what am I doing wrong? Mechanically, am I doing something wrong? Strength-wise, in the quality of the tissue, am I doing something wrong? And it just gives you feedback, like everything in life. You know, when you have these bumps in the roads, if you don't take the learnings from it, you'll keep hitting the bumps.
You mentioned longevity there, especially in the construction end. Like, lads are going to have to work into their 60s and are, you know, jumping up scaffolds and they're, you know, laying bricks and blocks and patios. What sort of advice would you give these? Like, again, we talk about time and not have enough time. What sort of advice would you give around, you know, longevity? What would you give?
Well, I think the quote, do something now to help your future self, is crucial, you know. So I always say to people that if you can't, if you're joining a gym or you're getting advice off a nutritionist, a dietitian, it's so that you can, you know, in life, we'll never live forever. Something eventually will come that will make us move on from this planet. I don't want to get too deep here, but something will really come along. Sorry.
Don't get me crying now in a second.
Exactly.
Sorry, John, it's not you. You're okay.
Something will come along.
Into the Grim Reaper over there, Billy.
And you want to be in your best, you want to put your best foot forward to fight whatever that is, you know? So, and I think that again is crucial for us to be really proactive in life instead of just wait till something happens and all of a sudden I'll have a bad back because of lifted it this way. So again, going back to Kira's point, go and ask for advice, go and get a coach that's going to help you be more functional for your everyday life so that you can make more money. If you want to align it to a personal goal by making more money, okay, let's get the body moving better, let's get the nutrition right, get the energy up. Because again, if you need more energy because of your workload, well then you need to give it back somewhere.
Kira, same question to you in relation to, you know, timing and people sitting, there's lads sitting on sites now and girls sitting on sites going, oh, I'll never be skinny and I'll never be better. There is never a time not to start, is there?
Oh, I couldn't agree more. It's never too late. Like, why not start? Like, what are you actually losing if you don't start today? One thing I would find the most helpful is set realistic goals. Like, if you're in your late 60s and you want to be in the best shape of your life, that might be a really difficult goal for you to get to. So be realistic. Definitely work with someone to help you find what that realistic goal looks like and make small changes over time. Don't try to change your whole life overnight because it's not sustainable. You're not going to keep it up if you're doing 10 things differently the next day. You might do it for a week, but it's not something that you'll bring with you through life. And I think with lifestyle changes, the best way to look at it is to find habit changes that you want to continue forever and that you will enjoy and that you see change and you kind of get a bit of motivation from changes that you're noticing within yourself. I think a lot of people just equate weight loss with healthy changes, and there's a lot going on internally when we make dietary changes or physical activity changes or we stop smoking or we reduce how much we drink. There's so much metabolic and health factors that are changing exponentially that you don't see, and your weight might not change, and that can be really demotivating for some people. But setting realistic goals and understanding that small health focus changes that you're making are definitely having an impact on your health and your longevity and your ability to continue working for longer and live a longer, healthier life, even if your scales don't change.
Kira, it is an advantage of probably working a physical job. You know, we're here in the, you know, everyone's sitting down and, you know what I mean, not moving as much as we like. An awful lot of people listening will be working in trades and they're active and busy. They have, for want of a better word, a head start.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely. Sedentary life is having a huge knock-on effect on everyone's health span and lifespan. If you are working a active job and you're aging, you're growing, our muscle mass will decrease from the age of 30. And we require a bigger amount of protein to help keep that muscle mass on. And, you know, the more you can strengthen your muscles through nourishing your body with enough protein and then doing the physical work at your work is going to prevent any injuries and it's going to help you stay longer. So yes, we're at such an advantage of active lifestyles, but you definitely need to make sure that you're having enough protein throughout the day to keep your muscles strong and prevent any injury and hopefully, you know, get you to work longer.
Yeah. Billy, both conversations have intertwined a little bit, but just from a mental health point of view, what are kind of warning signs for you, little things that people could be self-aware of, that they could kind of catch themselves and see that's a trigger for me maybe to talk to someone or seek help?
Yeah, it's very complex, but I'm going to simplify it. Like, so the crucial thing is in life, we're all problem solvers, you know, and the more problems you solve, the more, you know, you learn and grow in life, you know. So for me, when you've got negative emotions that and they continue, they're kind of the red flags, you know. So, you know, this has lasted a couple of days and I can't shake it and I don't know what's going on. They're the kind of warnings, you know. If you don't have the tools to actually solve that problem, then you need to go and speak to somebody that has got the tools. And it could be somebody in your tribe or somebody in your family that you might, you know, be able to speak to, or it might be professional. So I think they're crucial. And again, you know, if negative emotions are making you feel a certain way. Well, then once you solve that problem and get to a point where maybe you speak or you build up a base of knowledge or understanding of why that's happening, then you get positive emotions from that. And that's all that happens in life. Every time you do something in life is about solving a problem, whether it be in work, school, whether it be sport. You're just solving problems all the time. That's what you're doing. And then when you're feeling certain ways, then that's just giving you feedback that you need to be able to either answer that or else get somebody to help you with that. So I know that's very simplified, but I do think we just got to realise that pain and suffering is inevitable. There's nobody on this planet, unless you're Ned Flanders out of Simpsons, that's going to be happy all the time, you know?
Yeah.
So it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Adversity is going to come into your life at certain points. And, you know, at certain points, you know, they will become opportunities for you in life.
Hmm. It's a great way to leave it, guys. Philly, Ciara, thank you so much for joining us on Under Construction with Chadwicks. It's been a great chat, and hopefully there's been people that have listened that can get something out of it. Thanks so much.
It's very many.
Thanks
for having us.
Thank you.
Donnie, as you know, every episode we bring in a supplier and put them under the spotlight. So this week we're very lucky to be joined by Hugh O'Reilly from Keypoint. Hugh, thanks very much for joining us.
No, thanks for having us, guys. Great to be here.
So look, why don't you start off, like Donnie wouldn't have a clue about most things, but in particular, the construction sector and distribution business. You might give us an overview of, as they call it now in the world, a helicopter view of Keypoint and what you guys do.
Yeah, no problem at all. So we're a Dublin-based business. We're 21 years on the go this year. So we got the key to the door, so to speak. And you know, we've been a long-time supply partner to Chadwicks from a range of products, starting out with abrasives, but in latter years we developed into that PPE space, and that's where we've kind of found our niche, and in particularly in hand and foot protection. So we've got a distribution business both here in Ireland, servicing 32 counties, and also then we in 2013 we opened up an arm in the UK, and we've got 10 people employed over there at a distribution centre in Northampton. So we're the only hand and foot protection specialist actually based on the island of Ireland that's servicing both markets.
Wow, incredible.
So tell us a bit then about the business in relation to the PPE sector and what you're bringing to the market, as opposed to your KPIs, I suppose you call them.
Yeah, well, we represent three brands exclusively within the hand and foot space. On mechanical gloves, so protection from all manner of risks, from cuts, abrasion, that kind of thing, we deal with a company called ATG, and ATG are an integrated manufacturer, and their whole USP is that their gloves are built with the kind of wearer's well-being in mind. It's not just about protecting the hands. It's also about ensuring that the skin is safe, that there's no harsh chemicals, no residual chemicals from the manufacturing process that are left within the product. And one of their big kind of features and benefits, obviously, is that they manufacture gloves from size 5 right through to size 12. And you know, Pat, anybody in the trade, you know, that the hand is the most important and productive work tool that they have. So it's important that the glove that they're wearing doesn't inhibit them in any way from doing the job that they need to do, and that it enhances the hand as a working tool. And I found it very interesting from one of the earlier podcasts with Amy and Kate, and they explained about the difficulty as women within that construction space, that they found it really difficult to get PPE that fitted them correctly. And, you know, with ATG gloves going right down to size 5 and right up to size 12, we can literally cover every hand and make sure that the glove fits like a second skin. And
it's so important, really, isn't it, when you consider, like you said there, it is one of your main tools. And not only that, I've always found it with your gear, it makes you feel right for purpose, ready to go. It's important you feel good in it.
Yeah, and what really struck me actually about that first podcast was how, I think it was Amy who spoke about, you know, when she was wearing her Snickers or her mascot, and she had her boots on with her pink laces, and she just felt fit for work. And that's hugely important, not just from you know, having the right kit and making sure you're warm and you're dry and protected, but also that kind of physical and mental well-being, that you're kitted out properly and ready for work.
And there's a lot of innovation around your sector now in the PPE, and there's this discussion around well-being and, you know, what it means to come to work, and what, I suppose, what that well-being element means to the sector. Where are you guys with that then?
Yeah, well, again, ATG are very much at the forefront of that. They were the first kind of glove manufacturer globally who to have their products independently tested and certified to ensure that, again, they were skin safe. And that's done by a body called the Skin Health Alliance. And the Skin Health Alliance, it's a brand that everybody is probably aware of but doesn't necessarily recognise. If you pick up a bottle of moisturiser, shampoo, a lot of baby products, they're all accredited by the Skin Health Alliance and they've got that heart-shaped logo. And ATG are the only glove company doing mechanical work gloves that have that accreditation. And in addition then, our nitrile single-use or disposable gloves, they also have the same accreditation, which means that In that area of hand protection in terms of expertise, Keypoint are the only company anywhere in Europe that whose entire range, both single-use and reusable gloves, have that independent skin safety.
And your boot range?
Our boot range is made by an Italian company. And again, integrated manufacturing. So all the components they source are generally sourced locally in Italy. It reduces down on a lot of the air miles, and it means that it's a very sustainable product as well. They manufacture just outside of Venice in a small town called Padua. And again, they're experts in what they do. There's a lot of footwear out there in the market that carries a brand name of a tool manufacturer or a digger manufacturer, but they don't make shoes. Sixton shoes are made by shoemakers, and what they do as well is they look at the foot as, again, to use a construction term, it's the foundation of the body. You know, you're on your feet by 8 to 10 hours a day. And as a shoemaker with a lot of experience said to me years ago, there's two things you should invest in, your shoes, your bed, because if you're not in one, you're in the other. And it's a real truism. And the Sixton footwear is made using, again, only the best materials. The shoes they make for men's feet are different from those they make from ladies' feet, because the ladies' foot is slightly different in terms of its circumference. It's not just a scaled-down version of a man's foot. So a lady size 3 or 4 should be different in scale to a gent size. And Sixton make all of the ladies' footwear on a lady's last, specific to meet that demand.
And you've seen the demand on the ladies' side. You've seen that kind of increase the last number of years?
Absolutely, yeah. And particularly within that construction sector, you're seeing more and more women in construction. I think it's currently at around about 5%, and it's growing year on year, and it's fantastic to see. And we're strong supporters of diversity within the construction sector, and we believe that the partnerships we forged in our hand and our foot protection manufacturers reinforce that.
Mm. One of the themes of the podcast of the last number of episodes is around sustainability and, you know, secular economy. Yourselves and your products, where is the sustainability plug in there?
Again, on the reusable gloves, ATG manufacture gloves that are built to last. They're the only gloves in the market that are completely certified. Every single product has been certified, not just for protection prior to use, but also post-washing. So the gloves can be taken home, they can be washed, and as long as the washing instructions are followed, the gloves are safe for use for up to 3 washes. So again, given that 85% of the carbon footprint in a glove will create in terms of its lifespan is created at the point of manufacture. So if you can reuse a glove 3 or 4 times, it means you're reducing down on the overall carbon footprint of the product. Our nitrile disposable gloves, again, the entire range is biodegradable. They're certified to break down in landfill conditions in under 2.5 years by almost 93%. And again, that's a massive sustainability win for any organization that's going through disposable gloves. And we saw with COVID, between masks and gloves, they filled up the waste stream. And SW Safety, who are the manufacturer of these gloves, are strongly pushing the drive to zero waste, and we believe that the nitrile disposable gloves can certainly assist in that.
And then the future for Keypoint, and what's coming down the tracks? Have you any insight for us that you can share?
Well, the company has said we're on the go for 21 years. We're We're now 10 years in the UK, and we see ourselves growing into that, experts in hand and foot protection, potentially developing out other ranges beyond that. But you know, there's a lot of headspace for us to grow within the market we're currently in. We're promoting heavily our sustainability credentials and also our well-being credentials, because our products, from be it our gloves or our footwear, that they're a nicer experience for the wearer to wear.
And Pat's right on that. Just, I suppose my experience would be poor when it came to areas like PPE, but then COVID hit in and then everyone probably got used to a standard of wearing different things. So the standard probably has changed and people are looking for that element of comfort and quality.
Unquestionably. I think employers are more attuned to that as well, that they understand there's a regulatory requirement to make sure their employees are protected. But they also feel, I guess, if you're going to have to wear, and we all understood how uncomfortable it was to wear a mask if we were outdoors or indoors during the COVID period. If you've got to wear a glove all day long, it's making your hand sweat, or it doesn't fit properly, it's not a pleasant experience. So a lot of our gloves, whether it be with cooling technology within the product or the fact that they're the breathability across the entire 360 degrees of glove, allowing the hand to breathe, reducing sweat buildup, reducing that occlusive environment that people find when they wear gloves that can cause skin irritations and occupational skin disease. And yeah, you know, the ATG gloves are very much at the forefront of kind of eliminating or reducing those kind of issues in the workspace.
Very good. And you've seen a lot of growth then over the last number of years, even leaving COVID aside. We discussed earlier with another supplier in relation to what COVID had done for the business. Have you seen the market stabilise, or do you see an increase?
We didn't see a massive uplift in during the COVID period. We weren't really within that kind of respiratory protection market. So like yourselves, you know, the construction industry shut down for 3 months and we felt the pinch during that. It bounced back strongly. But I think to touch on your earlier point, Donica, yeah, a lot of people became more accustomed to the requirement to wear PPE. And there was a drive to wearing better PPE that's more comfortable. And so the business has certainly bounced back strongly since COVID.
Good. Well, look, I think onwards and upwards is what it sounds like. So, Hugh, thanks very much for popping in to see us. And best luck in the future.
Thank you very much, guys. Yeah.
Continued success. Thanks a million.
Cheers.
The Under Construction podcast is produced by the podcast studios for Chadwicks, Ireland's leading building merchant company, where you can choose from the best products and expert advice to get the job done. Drop into any of your local Chadwicks stores nationwide or visit us online at chadwicks.ie.
If you've been affected by any of the issues discussed in this podcast, you can find support at thesamaritans.org or call 116 123. Construction workers can also contact lighthouseclub.org or call 1800 939 122 or text HARDHAT to 50808. Alternatively, contact your local GP. If you are outside the Republic of Ireland, please contact support organisations in your country.